Ecology. I'm Dan Paulus with the WLRH Community Newsroom. This is 89.3 Huntsville Public Radio.
Thanks to Dan Paulus from our community newsroom for that audio postcard. It is a blessing, so to speak, to remain in one's own home through the end of one's life. That can, however, come with consequences. Isolation can signal vulnerability to corrupt caretakers and scammers alike. In the next segment, we sit down with three individuals all well aware of elder care issues: Madison County Probate Judge Frank Barger, Martinson and Beeson Attorney Doug Martinson, and American Senior Assistance Program President Shonda Crutcher. In this Elder Care Roundtable, they share some of what they learned at the Strategies and Training to Advance Greater Elder Safety panel back in August. Each panelist is actively working to educate seniors and their loved ones on how to report and avoid elder abuse.
I think that in hearing from groups from other parts of the country, that we were pleased that we are as far along as we are in the work that we're trying to accomplish, but it gave us an opportunity to refine that a little further, to learn best practices from other communities, and we came back with a pretty strong plan of how we want to move forward and tackle some of the issues that we have.
This is Shonda Crutcher, and when I think about a phrase, they use the term repeatedly, MDT, multidisciplinary team. And we hear that a lot when it comes to healthcare and the clinical side of caring for those that are aging, but I had never heard it used with regards to exploitation. It's bringing in multidiscipline, so your attorneys, the judges, social workers, investigators, and bringing them all to the table to discuss how we can best combat this issue. And it makes sense that it would work because it works in other areas, but just had never thought about using that concept or that term. But as Judge Barger says, we were doing that already. We were starting to reach out to other disciplines, but just to see that that was a formalized thing that was working well across the country, it was something to take under consideration as we took our marching orders coming back.
And Doug?
Right. This is Doug Martinson, and I think the big thing we came away with is that there are grants out there to send prosecutors and investigators, that the issues that prosecutors face here are the same ones they face all across the country, whereas they will always say that, well, the elderly person who's being abused or exploited wanted me to have this money and they gave it to me. And so there's a lot of ways that the prosecutors can learn how to fight that and to contradict that, and to bring these cases against the people who are abusing the elderly, and basically with exploitation.
So this is for Judge Barger. When you hear about the cases of elder abuse occurring, what are some common traits that you learn about those victims? Do they suffer some sort of mental health disorder?
It could be various things. You see it when someone starts to experience memory loss. It could be someone who maybe has no children, or their family is at such a distance from our community that they have no familial support system here. And so you'll see maybe a hired caretaker or another individual move in and further seclude that individual, cut them off from their social circle, from their church environment, and from any family they might interact with. That's very common for us to see.
Right. I think you see a lot of people who are being isolated. And then our community is unique in that if you look at, we had the BRAC in 1997. We had a lot of people move here from St. Louis. A lot of times their families were grown or their kids didn't want to follow. They had good jobs. They have good pensions. They have good retirement plans. They'll have a paid-for house, and they may be a millionaire in many cases. And they have, you know, several thousand dollars a month coming in, and they have no family support here. Some of them had not been married. I have recently one who she came here, and she basically says, well, I don't want my family from East St. Louis coming down here to get any of my money. And so you do see a lot of that where people are isolated. They don't have a connection as much in the community, going to the churches or the civic organizations or taking part in their garden clubs or learning quests or other various things that are here.
So would you all say that the isolation is the common reason why this elder abuse is so common, especially in the Tennessee Valley?
I think isolation is definitely one of the common denominators. Mm-hmm. Do you see it all the time across the board? Absolutely not. But I definitely feel like isolation is a precursor to many of the issues that we see in both exploitation, abuse, and neglect.
So from what you have seen, Shonda, what would you say is the common reason there?
Breathing. I think I have even learned the hard way myself, and I'm only 45 years old, but the predators are becoming more and more savvy. Mm-hmm. And you name it, they can find a scam to get to that individual. And so aging individuals can be at a higher risk for exploitation and abuse, but I definitely say no one is immune from it. So even if you have a large circle of friends, sometimes that pool of friends, as we've seen in social organizations, that's where the predators come from. And so I think everyone has to do the due diligence in educating themselves that there is the opportunity to be scammed. There is the opportunity to be exploited so that they can put in systems around them to help minimize the risk.
And so let's talk about those sort of protections against those sorts of scams. What is available right now? What sort of resources are available to people in the Tennessee Valley to help prevent these sort of things from happening?
Yeah, the AARP has a lot of lists on scams, and it's just really being aware. And I believe if family members or friends can see if the person's being isolated, if they see they have new friends, if they're worried about money, if they're very defensive about what's going on. Because a lot of times if the individual knows that they've been scammed, they're scared if their children know or somebody else that they're going to be taken out of the house and put in a nursing home. And sometimes that's threatened by either family members or the scammers. Oh, well, if they find out, you're going to be placed in a nursing home, I'm going to be the one that'll keep you at home. So I think it's really just having an awareness of, with the whole community looking out for their brother and being their brother's keeper, whether it's a church organization or a garden club, or some other activity, and for people to be aware of the signs out there.
I'd like to piggyback on what Doug said. I'm on the executive council for the AARP here in Alabama, and they have done a dynamic job with their fraud watch. And so there is a site that seniors can go on to. It's aarp.org/fraud watch. And they can register to get frequent text messages on the different scams that are going out. Just this past week, I received a phone call from Huntsville Utilities on a Saturday saying that they were going to come and shut the utilities off at our building if we did not pay immediately. Well, Huntsville Utilities doesn't send anyone out on Saturdays. Our bill was paid in full. And when I called the number back to the main line, they said that it was a very prevalent scam that was going on, even showed up on AL.com by Monday morning. And so AARP was quick to get that text message sent out to its constituents who had registered to let them know, beware of this scam. And so there are things like that that people can sign up to just get notices on when there's things going on specifically in their community throughout the state.
I think I would also, and this is Frank Barger, I would encourage anyone, if you have a concern, if someone that has been in your social circle, someone that you go to church with, however you know that individual, if they become withdrawn, if their demeanor completely changes, if a new person steps in that you've never met before, I think many people are hesitant to step forward and voice concerns, to check in. They don't want to be involved. They don't want to cause an issue. I would encourage that person to step forward, whether it's so extreme they need to call law enforcement, whether they need to reach out to a family member of that individual that they might know. Don't hesitate to check in and ensure that individual is being cared for properly and that there's not something negative going on in their situation.
Can we expound upon the sort of signs that people should be aware of? You mentioned a few there, Frank. Can we think of anything else, Doug or Shonda?
Well, I think isolation is, in my opinion, is the number one issue when someone completely withdraws from everything. Elderly individuals, as they start to lose their circle of friends due to age, they become lonely. And so it's very easy for an individual to take advantage of someone who is older and maybe who has lost a spouse and lost three or four of their closest friends. It's very easy for someone to come into their environment and become everything that they need. And then take over. And so isolation for me is probably the most critical. If someone that has been involved in an organization you're in, your church, whatever it might be, someone you know, and they kind of disappear from their normal routine or existence, look into it.
Yeah, and just to specifically speak to your question, depression. We see a lot of depression, becoming more teary, not eating, behaviors that are inconsistent with their norm. So increased spendings, buying large ticket items. We had a client some years back, I think he had purchased 9 or 10 vehicles. And that is a sign of some frontal temporal stuff that was going on in this particular case. Mm-hmm. But you also see that with exploitation if they're buying things for other people. They're buying these vehicles and they're being exploited. Paranoia. We oftentimes will dismiss the paranoia, especially if there's some noted cognitive impairment. But sometimes there's some truth in the middle. And so I would just caution one to not say that is just grandpa or that is just mom. She's always been paranoid. I would chase that rabbit for a minute and make sure that there's no truth in it.
Anything you want to add, Doug?
Right, I would agree. And there's also a lot of people who are hoarders or shop on Home Shopping Network, and they may buy 10 of the same thing or so their house becomes cluttered, and sometimes the people will not let you into their house. We've been in hoarding houses that are, they're terrible and just like off the show where you couldn't even walk in the front door because it was so piled up with items.
I think Doug is hitting on something real key. Sometimes exploitation is not an individual. It's an entity. You know, the home shopping networks, the sweepstakes. I have clients, I walk in and they'll have a stack of bills, they say, and it's from solicitors that are trying to get money from them because they've always given. And so that needs to be controlled as well because those audiences or those entities know who to target. And so a scammer, a predator may not be an individual. It definitely may be an entity, and we've seen it with the home shopping networks and those other groups. They know how to target that vulnerable population.
Let's talk about the people who are the abusers in this case. Before you mention it could be family or complete strangers, what do you see in your unique perspectives most often?
Well, the studies show that 40% of the abusers are family members. Mm-hmm. And so you have a family where somebody is unable to get a job. They may have had a drug problem, an opioid trouble, alcoholism. So they're living at home because they don't have any place else to go, and they're wanting to use the money to buy illicit drugs or alcohol. And so they're the ones that are there taking advantage. So that's a large part. Also, they're able to get a veteran's check from the VA, or they're able to get their Social Security, so they come in and get that. Then the others are just people, they may have met at a Waffle House. They may have met at a square dancing place. They may have met at, even church where they go out and will get involved in being a caretaker. And then there's others that are just anonymous that are on the internet, the people that have the Jamaican lottery, and those people will never be caught. That money sent off, and it's in green dot cards or either cash and transfers and money orders. But the ones we really, can do something about are the people who are the serial predators, because once these people die or once they get stopped, they move on to the next one, and we've seen that happen as well.
Shonda?
The Nursing Home Abuse Center, they did a training just here recently that showed that 1 to 2 million older adults over the age of 65 have been abused, mistreated, or exploited by a caregiver. And so I think we definitely have, and we've seen this a lot over the years, those that are entrusted to care, they're in the best position to see the deficits, sometimes cognitive deficits, sometimes incapacitation deficits that just keep them from getting to the bank, getting to the store. And so they use that opportunity because of their positioning. And so I think that where caregivers can be a tremendous resource for families, never should an individual totally transfer all of the decision-making capacity to a paid caregiver and not still check in on mom or check in on dad and assume that, Miss Sue just takes excellent care and she just really loves my mom. Sometimes that's with benefit. And so I think we have to acknowledge that even though professional caregivers, family caregivers are a tremendous resource, they also are a major source of indiscretion when it comes to taking advantage of seniors.
I think this is Frank Bardrett. I think it's important to point out that we have all, Doug, Shonda, and myself, have all seen situations where you had a caregiver who was doing a tremendous job in caring for the individual.
Yes.
Well fed, all their social activities are covered, home is well kept, but are taking advantage of them financially and family or their other support system might not be aware of it. You've got to stay engaged if you've got a care, if you've got some type of caregiver in place for a loved one. You have to stay engaged.
So when this sort of thing happens, how often is it reported? Because I would assume it, you know, with certain cognitive disabilities or anything going on there, it might not happen so much.
Doug and Shonda might be able to give you statistics, but I will tell you that in many cases it's not reported. Mm. An individual, if they're having intermittent memory issues, are embarrassed that they've been taken advantage of, and you could have somebody that has no cognitive impairment, but they're lonely and get taken advantage of. They're embarrassed. They don't want to come forward with those issues. So it's a small amount that's reported.
The last stat I saw, it's about a $20 billion problem, and, mm-hmm. and these stats are from 2010. Mm-hmm. And actually at the conference we went to, they were still using those, so that they haven't been updated. But they're also saying that only about 1 in 20 cases get reported. Mm-hmm. So that $20 billion is probably a lot higher than that because of the lack of reporting and the lack of follow-through and tracking of it.
I was at an AARP training here locally just about 2 months ago, and the gentleman that was speaking there said that, you know, you rob a bank, you get on average about $10,000, and it's a 10% chance that you're going to get caught. You take advantage, you rob an older adult, the figure's averaging over six figures, and it's an 85% chance is the number that he quoted, you won't get caught. Wow. And so I think it is definitely the consensus that senior exploitation, elder abuse is not being reported. And I think it's so incumbent that we have these type of conversations and not just discuss the fact that it's happening, but why it's happening.
Mm-hmm. And our issues here locally are going to continue to grow. We are the fastest growing metro in the state of Alabama. People move here with no connection to our community because they want to be close to Redstone Arsenal. They're retiring here or moving here for maybe a position later in life where they don't have that familiar connection, and this problem is only going to continue to increase for us here.
So in the slight chance that it would be reported, what's the process like from reporting it to prosecuting it?
So you can report it, and the sheriff's office is taking a look at a lot of the cases. They don't have any forensic accountants, so you know they have some great investigators that take a look at it, and then they report it to the DA, who brings it before the grand jury. And there's been a few cases here recently that have been brought before the grand jury, but I think the laws are very strong in Alabama. The laws are very strong. In fact, if you're over the age of 60, you're considered to be an elder. The laws are there. It's just getting a task force to come in to take these cases, to prosecute them, and to know how to do it because there is some expertise there. But the one thing I look at is if the state or we can get these grants and pay for this, it will pay for itself with Medicaid. Because the issue is if somebody goes and they've had $200,000 or $100,000 taken from them and they have to go into a nursing home and they have to go on Medicaid and they don't have the money to pay for it, the state or the federal government has to pay for that through the state Medicaid program. And that is money that could have been used to pay for their private care in a nursing home and keep them off of Medicaid.
Our Adult Protective Services Act here in Alabama allows for individuals to be able to get the help they need through the Department of Human Resources. And there is a number to report abuse and neglect. And I can share that with your listeners. It's 1-800-458-7214. They can call that number from anywhere in the state. But I think if we're really going to put things in place to prosecute those who have committed the crimes, to educate those that need to be educated on how to act out about a crime that's been committed against them, and to also have some preventative efforts, we're going to have to go after the federal grant dollars. We're going to have to go after the opportunities to collaborate with those multidisciplinary entities to really brainstorm on how to build a safety net.
Anything else to add to
well,
that, Frank?
I would tell you that our local law enforcement, our sheriff's office, down to our municipal police officers are very responsive to this issue. And so don't be afraid to come forward. They're very responsive. Of course, as a judge, if I interact with them and tell them I have a concern or we bring a case to their attention, of course, an attorney like Doug or a practitioner like Shonda that have been in the community for so long, our law enforcement's very responsive to us. But don't hesitate to come forward if there's an issue. There are basics in place to ensure that happens. Our goal in developing this task force is to ensure that we educate folks and that we collaborate and use the resources we do have to their maximum.
So, Shonda, I had a question for you. As a certified guardian, I wonder, have you ever had a patient who confided in you who did not want to go to the police? And what was the protocol that you had to follow when that happened, if it happened?
It happens on a very regular basis. I think one of the reasons it happens is just out of fear. You know, usually the person that is exploiting the older adult, they're all they have. And so it's the fear of losing them. It's the fear of making them angry. I think shame and being embarrassed. You know, I was told when my husband yelled at me that I was falling victim to a scam on Saturday. He was like, "That's a scam. Hang up the phone." Mm-hmm. I was totally embarrassed. I mean, just the idea that I could be had. And, you know, just because you age doesn't mean you're ignorant. And we have some seniors that carry a whole lot of wisdom. And so to even think about the fact that they've been had mm-hmm. by someone, that can be very embarrassing. And so I've had a lot of fear, a lot of shame be the reasons that they're not coming forward. Loss of independence. You know, a lot of the older adults are afraid, if I concede to the fact that I've allowed someone to come in and take me this way, then I can potentially lose all of the independence that I have. And that is where I think we just have to be really committed to making sure that when we go in and speak to these issues, that we continue to advocate for individuals to be in the least restrictive environments as possible with the least amount of intervention as possible so that they can maintain that independence. And the worst case scenarios don't dictate future reporting.
Do you have a specific example that you can share with us? You can keep the person anonymous, but do you have a specific story to share regarding that?
I think I had one.
Sure.
Where, I mean, this
person. This is Doug.
Yes, this is Doug Martinson. And so there was an individual who worked at NASA. He was in his 80s, and he had been taken advantage. Somebody came by to pressure wash his house or pressure wash the driveway, and he ended up pressure washing the house and finding all these, quote, problems that he spent about half the value of the house to fix. And he had a good income. He had, $500,000 in his pension. And so when the Department of Human Resources, Adult Protective Services had me appointed, he didn't have anything. And then he was also losing his house because the person went out and got a loan on the house at 17% interest. So here you have a fully paid for house, and he had income of over $7,000 a month with his retirement, and he's getting a loan, and he'll end up losing the house, but by the time we needed to get him out. But he was very embarrassed about going forth and letting anybody know that, because we said, you know, would you want to tell your story to the investigators or anonymously to the news media? And he said, you know, no, he didn't, because he was really just embarrassed about it, even though he would have been kept anonymous. But he didn't have any family. He was not married and had no children. And he was actually a mathematical genius. Mm-hmm. You'd go over there and he would be working on some very complicated math problems that he was saying, well, I'm trying to figure this out. And he tried to figure it out for, you know, months. But so it's not limited to lower education level, because this guy was, a genius.
So please correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like financial abuse is more common than physical abuse regarding elder abuse.
The physical abuse still shocks me, and mm-hmm. I think it's one of those things that's still way below our radar. I think that's why the need for public education is so so real. We see the financial because it hits the radar. People care about their resources, and sometimes the resources of others or that they think they're entitled to at a later date. And so people report that. The financial abuse is reported. But what I am starting to see more of, Doug, especially in the last couple of years, is that when we are alerted with the financial abuse, we're seeing physical. We had an immigrant, a self-made millionaire. She really worked hard her entire life, took care of her family, extended family well. And an individual, it was a romance scam, came in. He took tons of money from her, got her to buy him homes, and, you know, you name it. And there was also some allegation of physical abuse. And so I think the physical abuse often tags on to the exploitation. It's not just what makes it to the discussion table usually. So I think we're going to have to really have some conversation about how we get individuals to speak out, just like with domestic violence. I think the same type of education that we had to do to get women to speak out and be safe, we're going to have to be just as tactical and sensitive to the needs of those elders that are being physically abused.
One component of the work that we're trying to accomplish is education in general, but those folks that are going to serve in an official capacity as a caretaker, and officially would be called the guardian, those individuals that are going to serve as a conservator. And a guardian oversees healthcare decisions, homemaking, you know, their daily support, and a conservator is going to oversee the management of their financial assets. Is making sure, because many individuals could be a family member, could be a close friend, it would be proper that they serve, that the court appoint them, but they don't know what they're getting into. It's very difficult work to be a guardian and to do an excellent job. It's difficult work to be a good conservator and manage someone's assets, someone's finances, real estate, bill paying, and it becomes a job in itself. And many folks get involved on the front end and become miserable in the process, and not intentionally, but end up doing a poor job. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that my court is working to change is ensuring that those individuals that are going to serve know what they're getting into, that there is some education on the front end before I sign an order and appoint one of those individuals, so that they know the responsibility they're taking on. Because we see issues that predate my being on the bench, where someone's been put in place, and it's not necessarily intentional, but by neglect, they've done a very poor job in their work as a guardian or conservator. And so we've got to do some more work on the front end to ensure people are prepared to serve.
And Judge Barger, caregiving is just stressful. Ooh. And so you get someone who has a family that they're trying to take care of, and an older individual. And let's just say there were relationship dynamics prior to them having to take on those caregiving responsibilities. I think that is where you're I think the physical abuse with elder abuse just looks different. Where you have an aggressive person who everyone knows is aggressive, usually with domestic violence when it's in younger populations. I've been really shocked to see the perpetrators across the country as I participate in national conferences. You see these perpetrators, and they're these little ladies that sometimes look frail themselves, and that you wouldn't pick out of a lineup to be a physical abuser. But I think we really undereducate to the stress of caregiving and under-equip those caregivers, which does not excuse them to lay hands on mama. But I think it definitely is an area that we're going to have to focus some more deliberate education on as that population grows, because the stress is real.
Doug, would you like to add anything?
Right. And I think the physical abuse, there's a lot of outward signs. You know, if there's bruising, if there's injuries where they go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. So most of the time, the financial abusers don't want to enter because that's where they're getting their money from. And some of the abusers are very nice and have been very good caregivers. And I think they get in there and they have an entitlement mentality. Well, I'm helping mom, my sisters aren't, or my brother's away, I'm going to take all what I can, or they're the caregivers that are in there and it's there. So the physical abuse is there, but not as much as the financial abuse.
Well, and this is Frank again, and Doug has seen this while I've been on the bench, so Shonda. I become very frustrated with family members who feel an entitlement to the resources of their mom or dad or a grandparent. I've had family members say, well, that's my money. Well, no, it's not. Those resources were earned by mom or dad or grandmother. They're there to ensure their care, that individual's care, their best interest. And so I have to remind folks on occasion, the court's role, my role in this process, is to ensure that that individual, however they're incapacitated, is well cared for and that their assets are protected. And it's not about ensuring that there's an inheritance or that there's something left over.
Yes.
If we use every last penny to make sure that your mom or your loved one is cared for, this court's going to do that.
Mm-hmm. I had a client sitting on my couch just last week, and she was in tears, saying that her beneficiary, the only living relative that she had, that she had made beneficiary over everything, calls her almost daily, not to inquire about her well-being, but to inquire about what money is being spent, and to minimize the grocery bill, and to minimize, she said, if I want to go buy a new dress. And even got as bold to say here recently, there's not going to be anything left. And so what is my stress? What is it worth? How is this worth it to me to take care of you now if you're not, if there's not going to be anything left for you to leave me? And you think that that is brazen, but I hear things like that more, way more common than I ever thought I would.
And I'm seeing a greater frequency in the court of the appointment of someone outside of the family. Family dynamics are interesting, all things perfect. Mm-hmm. We all have family dynamics. But with greater frequency, we are appointing someone independent of family to serve as a guardian and as a conservator, because those dynamics in many cases are very negative. And you might have someone that manages care and manages assets well, but the dynamics involved are so negative that it becomes a burden for the individual that's being cared for. And the court tries their best. I try my best to eliminate that for someone that needs care.
Talking to our listeners directly, how would you advise them to gather sufficient evidence to make a case for something like this?
Well, I think if they can get bank statements, of course, a lot of times they want them kept secret. We had somebody recently who was, they came in and the abuser was shredding all of the bank statements. She said that the elderly person wanted his bank statements shredded, but, you know, that's always a bad sign. So I think if you can get those, find that information, or file an action to see those documents, to see to subpoena the bank statements if you have to, and going to court, that's one thing that can be done.
Regarding physical abuse, how might they fortify the case?
I think to fortify the case would be to take pictures of any physical abuse. And there's cameras, you know, that you can put in place. You know, you have these Ring doorbells, and so you could have cameras wherever, and hopefully not invade the person's privacy, but have cameras to document any physical abuse.
We call it the three C's. We say if you have caregivers, you should have cameras, checks and balances. So caregivers, cameras, and checks and balances. You have to have more than one person with total autonomy, and if at all possible, if you have caregivers coming in and out of your home, there should be cameras.
I would also encourage those folks that are aging, that are doing estate planning, that are planning for end of life, and that's horrible terminology, but we all get there, is be honest about what you want to have occur, what you want to have in place, and seek out a legal professional that can put all of that in place for you. We experience many situations that are unfortunate where if they had done more planning on the front end, they could have made the directive early on who is going to take care of them, manage resources, that type of thing. And so early planning is important. But if you're in a situation where mom, dad, your loved one has lost capacity, seek out someone that specializes in that area of care. We have numerous attorneys in Madison County that specialize in elder care, that specialize in guardianship and conservatorship work. We have professionals like Shonda. Seek out individuals that are qualified to assist you, and spend those resources up front to help mom or dad or whomever that loved one might be, because it's worth it. Put something in place and use the proper resources.
So to conclude this panel discussion, is there anything else that you all want to throw in there before we say goodbye? Start with Doug.
All right. Yeah, this is Doug, and I would say that, you know, to be on the lookout for your fellow neighbor, if you see anything, if you see somebody maybe being exploited, if there's new people coming in, unsavory people, and the change in behavior, if they become defensive or secretive or don't want to talk about who's coming in, and then also try to alert their family members or a professional or Department of Human Resources, Adult Protective Services, or the other hotlines.
I just say communicate, communicate, communicate. You know, as an elder adult, communicate your wishes early, pre-need. Make sure that your family members know what your wishes are with regards to not just your estate, but with your person. Because I think sometimes people think, well, I don't really care what happens with the money. But you do care what happens with you and care costs. And so to have communication proactively is going to cost you less financially, emotionally. It's going to minimize your chances of being exploited or neglected. So communicate.
Judge Barger.
Just to reinforce what Doug and Shauna both had to say, number one, don't be afraid to call someone. Don't be afraid to step forward if you feel or suspect there might be an issue. Best case is there's nothing wrong. Worst case is you don't step forward, you don't bring an issue forward, and it goes on too long and it becomes a very detrimental situation. Second of all is, you know, be aware. Make sure your family is aware of your wishes, as Shonda said. Communicate early. They're difficult conversations to have, but make sure that you do everything you can on the front end, if at all possible. None of us want to think about aging and losing some of our faculties, but we all get there. And so planning early and putting everything in place, it makes a huge difference as you do age.
Well, awareness is the key, and we just want to formally thank WLRH for taking the time to do this. It means a lot that we educate our community, and you guys are definitely leaders in doing so. So thank you.
Thanks again to our panelists. You heard Madison County Probate Judge Frank Barger, Martinson and Beeson Attorney Doug Martinson, and American Senior Assistance Program President Shonda Crutcher. They're part of a national effort to address elder care challenges called STAGES, Strategies and Training to Advance Greater Elder Safety. And as you may have heard Shonda say, you can report elder abuse through the Adult Abuse Hotline at 800-458-7214. Calls can be made anonymously. More